Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Welcome to the show, Katie. Thank you so much for being here with us. You guys, Katie is from Chicago, right? Chicago. Yep. She is an IVF mama. She's got three girls. She's a girl mom and two identical twins and then a baby girl. How old is your baby girl now?
She's going to be 3 months tomorrow.
3 months. So still little tiny. Oh my gosh. I love it. So yeah. And you guys, when she's not, you know, doing the mom thing with all of her girls, she's also a newborn and family photographer, which is awesome. Yeah. Can you share with us your handle so we can come follow you?
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm at Katie Michelle Studios.
Okay, Katie Michelle Studios. And we're going to make sure to have that in the show notes, you guys, so you can go follow her and follow her amazing work. And if you're in Chicago and you need newborn or family photos, hit her up. Is there like a specific, Chicago's kind of big too, is there a specific area that you serve?
I'm in the Northwest suburbs, but I do in-home sessions all over, and I have, I use a studio in Oak Park, so.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. And then your stories today, we've got a couple highlights, right? We've got IVF, placental abruption, sticky placenta. I'm excited to talk about sticky placenta for sure, because it's not something a lot of people talk about and that what can happen. And of course, the twins and all of that. So we are going to get into that, but I do have a review of the week. You guys, I know every single week you're probably sick of me asking, but I love your reviews. Thank you so much for your reviews. And remember, we always accept your reviews. Okay, this is from Cassie80. It says, extremely education and super empowering. It says, after a traumatic C-section in 2016, on my research journey about VBAC, I came across this podcast and instantly fell in love. You guys, that just says something to me. 2016 is when she had her C-section, and 2018 is when this podcast started. It's kind of crazy to think that it's been going for so long, but I'm so grateful for all of you guys sharing your stories, like you, Miss Katie, for helping this continue on. It says, I am currently trying for number two. And I'm on a mission to VBAC, and hearing all these wonderful stories of strength has given me the confidence that I can do it when the time comes. You and all the women who courageously share their stories are just amazing. You all provide healing and the support for all of us mamas. Thank you so much, Cassie. And I'm so glad that you are here with us and have been with us for so long. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link Podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Katie, thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on this podcast myself because I listened to you guys like nonstop my entire pregnancy, even before. And I always had in the back of my mind that, oh, if I get my VBAC, I'm going to come on here and tell my story. So super excited. And thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Let's talk about these twins. Let's talk about that birth.
Yes. So they were IVF, but they were obviously, surprise, identical twins. My embryo split into obviously identical twins, but they were an interesting pregnancy because usually with IVF, the twins are monodi, which means that they share a placenta and have two sacs. But my girls are actually, they were di-di. So they had two placentas, two sacs. So that meant they were a little bit less of a risky pregnancy, and a vaginal birth was a possibility. So that's what I was planning on. Everything was pretty smooth up until 33 weeks, which is when I had my first bleed. It was just the middle of the night. I got up and I just started gushing. And the doctor said that it was a marginal placental abruption. So that means it was on the edge of the placenta and it wasn't like a risk to them. Obviously, it was super scary. I thought that like I was going to lose them both. But everything with them was fine. They sent me home after a few days at the hospital, just told me to take it easy. But they said it might happen again. And it did. 35 weeks and 3 days, I had another bleed. So at that point, they said like they're almost to like term for twins is technically 37 or 38 weeks is when they like to induce for twins. So they just said not to risk going any further and let's just get them out right now. So I was planning a vaginal birth, but because of that abruption, and we don't know, we didn't know like what state the placenta was in and what would happen if there was like, an induction process were to be started. So, like with the doctors, we decided I didn't want to risk induction and then needing a C-section anyway for the other twin. So, we did the C-section. It was really, really rough recovery, and they were in the NICU for a week. One of them needed like breathing support, and the other one was just there for like growing and feeding.
How big were they?
5 pounds 3 and 4 pounds 13 ounces. So they were a good size. They were overall healthy, but it was for me super duper rough. Like as a first time mom,
Oh,
the
yeah.
twins especially, the breastfeeding like journey was really hard. Like I dealt with low milk supply and they were so tiny that it was hard to like for them to latch. So I ended up exclusively pumping for 11 months. So that's their story.
Wow. That's a lot of work, by the way, for someone
Yeah.
who maybe hasn't pumped
True.
a lot. Holy cow. Good job.
Yeah. So when we decided for to have a third, which was a tough decision for us. My husband was not on board, but we ended up deciding that, we wanted to experience what it's like to have, a singleton baby and just having a singleton pregnancy, hopefully, and a VBAC. I definitely knew that I wanted a VBAC and started doing all my research. And I found a very VBAC supportive midwife group in my area. They have a 90 something percent VBAC rate in the hospital, which is crazy.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. What do you think that they do so different than a lot of other groups do that make them so successful? Or are you going to share about it? I'm sure.
Sure. I'm not sure, but I think the hospital might be part of it. Like the hospital policies might be more supportive. They deliver it at Evanston Hospital, if anyone is interested. Overall, I think the doctors they work with, because it's like a midwife group that they work with doctors alongside, that when there's a delivery for the midwives, the doctors are also in the hospital. I think the doctors are also very VBAC supportive, so that helps, when they're working together.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's that story.
So tell me more about, so you found them, you found the providers. Did you go and ask them questions? Did you, or like, how did you feel like you found, you realized that they were supportive?
Yeah, I went on What's that group that is like does they have a Facebook group all around the country for different areas about like lowering the C-section rate?
Oh, cesareanrights.org.
I'm not sure. They're an organization
Oh,
that,
I can?
yeah,
I can.
ICANN. Yes.
Okay.
So I went on my local Facebook group for ICANN and I asked
Awesome.
around and I got their info. And I first went to see I went for like a appointment with one of the doctors at that practice before I was even pregnant because I was planning, you know, for the transfer. And I liked that doctor, but then I realized that they have midwives and people really raved about the midwives. They said they were like, you know, if you're looking for a more holistic experience and they spend more time with you than the doctors do. And I just decided to go that route. And somehow that picking the midwives made me kind of dive into like the whole unmedicated birth side of things as well. And I ended up hiring doula as well. So
Yay.
yeah, I was
Awesome.
never like into I never thought I'd be someone interested in unmedicated births. I consider myself to have very low pain tolerance.
But you so tell us about more about the birth. So did you have a low pain tolerance, but you did go unmedicated?
Yes, I ended up doing it.
Okay. So did you go into spontaneous labor?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I ended up having four membrane sweeps, which is not that spontaneous, but
Hey. Well, hey, you know, this is a thing. Like, a lot of people ask about that, like membrane sweeps. And sometimes people feel, hey, this is worth it. Let's do this. And some people don't. Sometimes it works. And sometimes it takes many. And sometimes it doesn't, right? Like, it's whatever feels right. So, when do you remember where you were with the first membrane sweep, like cervical wise, and what weeks and things like that?
Yeah, so I wanted to start them. So remember, I've never been pregnant past 35 weeks.
Right. Yeah.
So if like I really thought that I was going to have an early baby again, but that really wasn't the case. I had her at 40 and 5. So the membrane sweep, I started the first one I did at 38 and 6. So like basically my 39-week appointment. I had no change after that one. Nothing happened. And that's kind of what I assumed would happen. So I had another one the next week, 39 and 6. And that at that point I was 2 centimeters, 80% effaced, and negative one station.
So pretty good cervical statistics there for a membrane sweep.
So then it was my due date, and I was starting to like feel more like pressure. The mucus plug was coming out, and baby was like acting super active, which I heard can happen like close to when a baby's ready to be born. But nothing really happened at that point. So then I decided to get my third sweep. I think that was 40 plus two. And at that point, I was 2.5 centimeters, but
Okay.
the same for everything else. But things were starting to happen. I was having like more stuff come out, and I was like, oh my gosh, how much longer am I going to be pregnant?
I'm sure, especially, you know, this is the thing when you had either preterm or just early pregnancy or delivery before, and then you go past that, it feels like, no, I cannot be pregnant longer than this. This is eternity.
Yes, it was really hard because, you know, I had the 2-year-old twins also. It was getting to be a real like mental and physical struggle.
Yeah.
So also I was doing like pumping to try to induce labor and that wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
So I
Was
kept
it
going.
causing contractions at all, or was it just kind of causing him and then you'd stop and it would stop?
Yeah, basically
Yeah.
like it would just cause the Braxton Hicks contractions and nothing
And then go
else.
away. Yeah.
So then at that, so I had my third sweep and then that one really like started to do something because I went into prodromal labor, which was a doozy.
Yeah. And that's, that can be like a risk of trying a membrane sweep is it
Yes.
can cause you some prodromal labor. But again, a lot of the times prodromal labor still does stuff. Like it's tiring and it's exhausting, but like still doing something.
Yeah, and it definitely did for me. So my prodromal labor was like a nighttime thing. So the sun would go down, I'd put the kids to bed, and then it would start with like irregular contractions, like felt like period cramps. And then I wouldn't sleep all night with that. So I had
Yeah.
that for 2 nights, and then I
Typical
was finally,
prodromal.
yeah.
Oh.
And then it would go away during the daytime.
It's so annoying. It's like, seriously, like, fine. If you're gonna do prodromal, let's do it during the day when I'm at least like awake, but don't take away my sleep.
I know. At that point, I was starting to get like super disheartened. I decided to like schedule my induction because if this was gonna keep happening every night, I would have absolutely zero energy for this VBAC. So I did schedule my induction for 41 and 3, I believe, if I made it to that point. But I decided to go back and get my fourth membrane sweep June 3rd, so the day before she was born. And that started something. The midwife was like, okay, if I do this, I might see you back here later tonight.
That's a promising thing to hear.
So when she did that sweep, I was actually already 4.5 centimeters dilated. So that prodromal labor
Whoa.
was doing something.
100%.
So that morning I had that sweep. We went to like get lunch, walked around. I was starting to right away, starting to have contractions. And these were during the day, so I knew something was up. And by 4 p.m. that day, I was feeling it. I was like starting to meet counter pressure and like had to stop what I'm doing. So based on what like the doula had said, that's when I should call them. And I texted her and I told her, so like I'm having these contractions that I'm having to like stop and breathe through, but they're still like 10 minutes apart. So I don't know what's going on. She's like, okay, I think you need to stay home for a little longer. You're probably not in active labor yet. And I'm like, no, I think I'm there because these are really intense. So despite what she said, I decided to head to the hospital. And it's a good thing that I did because by the time I arrived around 10 p.m., I was already 6.5 centimeters.
Okay, nice.
Right? I was very surprised because usually I feel like what people say is what, the doula community says is once sometimes when you head to the hospital, when you're not in active labor, things can slow down for you because of the change of scenery and
Yes.
yeah, your body just kind of shuts down. But in my case, it actually was the reverse. Like I went from super irregular contractions to like walking up to the hospital doors, they started coming super regularly, like 2 to 3 minutes apart.
Maybe your body, because I do feel like the opposite can also happen where our body gets to that final destination and it's like, okay, you can do this now. And you have this sense of release. So what you were saying, like, yes, I've seen that too, where a lot of the times we have to like re the mom has to reacclimate to the space and kind of the labor kind of stalls a little bit and then it kind of goes on. But this one, it sounds like it was the opposite, where it maybe brought you relaxation and safety.
Yeah, and I think maybe part of it was that this hospital experience was so different than my last one. Like the last one, I was rushing to the hospital while I'm bleeding. I get there and there's like a rush of nurses. Everyone's like checking me. And this time it's like I waddled up to the hospital. The room is dark. There's one nurse that's checking me in. I'm just chilling on the bed. And it was like I was kind of like just relaxed. And I think a lot of the things that I did with the doulas to prepare, like they did classes about like comfort measures and things like that. I really was trying to use those. Got the twinkle lights set up and the music. So that really helped. So by 1 a.m., I was already feeling like the urge to push, and I was feeling like so much pressure, especially in my butt. So I needed counter pressure for like every single contraction up to that point. Then I was like, no more counter pressure. Like I was screaming to stop for my husband to stop doing it because it was starting to like hurt. And I knew something was happening. So I was on my side, like trying to get some rest in between. And I was starting to like give up at that point. And I know what they say is, you know, when you're starting to give up, that usually means transition.
Yeah, you're
But
right there.
for me, I was thinking, oh, like I need an epidural right
Well, a
now.
lot of people do, though. A lot of people in that, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. That's like that. I need that epidural. I need relief now.
Yep. And I hadn't had a check since I was admitted. So it's been about 5 hours since I showed up, or 4 hours since I showed up to the hospital. So I was like, this can't be like already, like, this can't be it. I can't be ready to push because I've only been here 4 hours and it's my first labor. So I was in disbelief, but I was like, I need a check right now because if I am not like close to pushing, I am getting the epidural. So, and the doula was trying to like talk me out of it. She's like, are you sure? What are you gonna do if you're not there? Like, I'm gonna get the epidural. So I was actually 9.5 centimeters at that.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Point.
Oh, wow, right there.
Yep. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually happening. Yeah. And I was starting to like, my body was starting to push on its own. And it was such a weird feeling. So different than like my friend's birth that I attended as a, I photographed her birth and she had the epidural and it was an induction. So that's the only other birth that I've seen. And this was so different because I was like, my body is like pushing. I can't control it. So, yeah, that was about an hour of pushing, which felt like an eternity. And the contractions were actually like fine at that point. Like, I couldn't feel them. I could just feel like loads of pressure and the ring of fire, which was intense, super duper intense. And then my water broke about 10 minutes before she was born. And yeah,
Probably
she was
finished.
born.
Probably finished. Like you get 10, your water's probably going out through breaks, baby comes down.
Yeah, I had like a bulging bag at the end,
Yep.
which is really interesting to feel.
Yeah.
She was born at 2:34 a.m.
Oh, that's awesome. So pretty dang quick. Really
Yeah,
dang
if
quick.
you don't count the 2 nights of
Prodromal labor.
labor, yeah.
But your body was doing it slowly and surely, and like each sweep kind of did give you that extra nudge, maybe gave you some prodromal labor along the way, but it seemed like, it was doing something, it was helping.
Yeah, if that helped me like avoid a medical induction, I'm like super glad that I did those.
Yeah. And that's something that when it comes to someone facing an induction or facing that hurdle, Membrane sweep might not be a bad idea, something to consider. But too, with that said, if we go in and we've got barely 1 centimeter, our cervix is really posterior, we're 30% effaced, we need to know mentally if you go for a sweep, the chances of it working is a lot lower. Like it's just lower because our body's maybe not ready. But that also doesn't mean it's not gonna work. So like what I was saying earlier, that you kind of had that like ideal cervical stat, you were like that 2 centimeter, 80% of face, like things were looking good, softer, starting to open, able to get a really good sweep. And even then it took time, right?
Yeah, definitely. And so my midwives never pressured induction on me. I was kind of pressuring myself,
Yeah.
mainly because IVF pregnancies, a lot of, I mean, there's differing opinions, but some doctors say that you should be induced at 39 weeks, and some say you shouldn't go past your due date because of the
Yeah.
placenta like
It,
not
yeah.
being as good. But I'm not,
Well, yeah, it's so hard because so was this an IV, so twins were IVF and was this baby IVF too? Okay, so that is hard because there are a lot of people that do say that, like you should induce at, 38, 39 week with IVF. And we do know out there that with IVF, the chances of having placenta things
issues,
like, yeah, abnormalities or issues like abruption, right? IVF does increase our chances of abruption, accreta, previa, things like that. But if everything is going okay, all is looking well, it's that battle of like, do we induce? Do we not induce? What do we do? And obviously your providers weren't pushing it, so they didn't see any like real medical need. But then we have other providers that are like on the complete opposite end where they're like pushing it hard.
In some of my like IVF groups on Facebook, like basically every single person is either induced or has a C-section. Like it's
Really?
pretty rare for a provider to say you can go to 42 weeks like mine did.
Interesting. I actually don't know the real stats on IVF placental issues after, 38 weeks. Has anybody ever talked to you about what your chance of issues really are after a certain point?
No, and the abruption was like, it was, I think more of a risk factor was that it was twins and like my uterus was so stretched, but no one really mentioned like placental issues or even like said, let's look at your placenta after 40 weeks. They do have like the standard ultrasound to like look at baby and do the BPP test, but yeah, they said that there's nothing really you can see from an ultrasound after your due date.
Yeah. We know that ultrasounds can be off by size, by all the things.
Yeah, and she was measuring bigger. She was like 85th percentile, which was actually true. She was born 8 pounds, 4 ounces. So she wasn't tiny like my twins were.
Yeah. I Googled really, really quick, just like, I don't know. This isn't even like a study. This is just like an article on it. So I'll try to get some more studies and things in here, but I'm gonna include this article. It's from the Real Birth Company, it says. It looks like they're teachers and yeah. It says like birth classes. It's highlighted. It says, what do you need to know if you are pregnant through IVF and you're being advised to have an induction because you're told there's a higher chance of stillbirth? Says the only study that we found that gives us the information also noted a higher risk of stillbirth for IVF pregnancies, but crucially, they saw no increase in the rate of stillbirth after 28 weeks of pregnancy. So it just says this research therefore tells us that induction at term would not necessarily reduce stillbirth at rates for babies who are conceived by IVF. So,
Yeah. From my understanding, it's like it's hard to do studies on this because a lot of p women that need IVF have other like factors,
Mm-hmm.
health factors, which can increase the risk of obviously stillbirth and other issues in pregnancy.
Yeah, it's kind of
So,
showing like sometimes IVF moms, like we know placenta accreta, placenta, abruption, a little bit higher risk there. It shows like IUGR babies, like they have like a higher chance for being smaller. Also says gestational diabetes and preeclampsia have an increased chance. So like you said, like there are other things that they may have. So I'm gonna just throw this in there in case anyone listening is an IVF mama and wants to know more, because it's kind of interesting that you're saying that in that group, they're either having, are they scheduling C-sections? Like just
Most
straight
women,
out.
well, most women, yeah, get scheduled C-sections, or not scheduled, scheduled inductions, but a lot of those end up
They
C-sections
end up
because they're
C-section. So
not
there's
ready.
not, okay, so they're not
Yeah.
necessarily scheduling the C-section right off the bat just because they're IVF.
Right, yeah.
Okay, but again, like you said, they're not ready and induction's happening and people are ending up in a cesarean.
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. Well, this article was written in 2021. I'm also gonna put a couple others in here that says actually 2024. So I need to look more into this, but it's something to consider because again, this is a space where we're trying to reduce unnecessary cesareans. We're seeing that it's happening, and so it might be something you want to research. If you're out there and you do an IVF, research that and see if it's something that really is necessary for sure.
Yeah, this is just a my personal story, but my placenta looked perfectly fine at 40 and 5 with this baby. So,
So everything was looking good at that point. We did talk about that in the beginning, sticky placenta, or it's really retained placenta. So did you have that with this baby? Can you talk to us more about placenta? So you
Yes.
gave birth to babe, had this beautiful VBAC that was a lot faster than you anticipated, and you went unmedicated when you didn't think you could, which I kind of love that so much that you're like, I have a low pain tolerance, but then you did that. Like, it just goes to
Yeah.
show how possible it is, right? But yeah, talk to us about your placenta.
Yeah, that was actually worse than like the pain of the entire birth and something I didn't expect because I had asked about this because it can be an issue with IVF pregnancies. I had asked about this in one of my prenatal appointments and the midwife said, "We don't know, like if you're going to have that or not, it is IVF is a risk factor for it." But since I had the opposite of a sticky placenta, I had a placenta that was coming off the wall with my last pregnancy. She's like, "I'm guessing that you're not going to have that." But I did. After baby was out, my placenta like was not coming out after like 10 minutes. And around 30 minutes, I think they like to, have it out by then. So they gave it a like 10 minutes to for it to come out naturally, but my contractions completely stopped. Like nothing was happening at that point. My body like wasn't expelling it. So they were trying to like, pull on it, and eventually it came out, but I was still having bleeding when they were pressing on my stomach. And more bleeding than they would like to see. So they gave me the Pitocin and that didn't work. And then they tried like two or three other medications.
Did they give you Cytotec at all?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And another medication that goes in the
Leg.
back.
Oh, in the back.
In the
Oh,
booty.
yes, that's Cytotec. They usually will do, rectally. They'll insert it rectally.
Yes.
Yes. Which plus with Cytotec is not okay when we're pregnant and we're trying to go into labor, but it does, because it makes the uterus contract so hard, right? Which is the whole issue with Cytotec and VBAC. It can help the reduce bleeding and help the placenta and all these things. Yeah.
Yeah, so they gave me like the max dose of Pitocin in my IV. Yeah, none of that worked. They gave me the Pitocin in the leg. That didn't work. The Cytotec. Then they brought out the ultrasound machine and scanned around and saw that there was like some pieces left inside. And so she had to stick her hand up and get them. And that was
And you're
horrible.
unmedicated.
Yes,
Girl, I'm gonna
which is
just tell you
part of
right
it.
now, you have a high pain tolerance. I think you might be incorrect on that. No, not saying that really, but like, holy cow, unmedicated and a retained placental retrieval, like scrape. They essentially are scraping and fishing for your placenta.
Yes. And she had to go in like two or three times. They gave
Oh.
me like some kind of IV medication, and all it did was make me feel like drunk. But
Probably fentanyl.
it was like something with a D, maybe. Demerol?
Oh,
I don't know.
Dilaudid?
Maybe Dilaudid.
Dilaudid. I think it's Dilaudid. Yeah.
That made me feel like loopy and like nauseous, but it did nothing for the pain. So yeah, I'm holding my baby the whole time, and it's like just they're oh, I just want to
So,
forget that
yeah,
horrible experience.
that is rough. And sometimes placentas, quote unquote, stay sticky, right? And it really can take up to an hour even for a placenta to come out. And sometimes we don't know why. And like you said, like IVF stuff, maybe could have helped, but the placenta usually is kind of in that 5 to 30 minute period. And providers do start getting worried if it's over that. Because the cervix, after we have our baby, our cervix was 10 centimeters. It dilated, right? Everything's all open and thinned. And then it starts coming back and it starts closing again, which is the
Oh my
normal
gosh, I didn't even
process.
think of that.
Yeah. So it's kind of just that normal process where it starts closing. And so providers start fearing that if the cervix is closed or too small, the placenta can't move through. And then we've got the placenta inside. And retained placenta is a very serious thing. Like you want to get your placenta out, right? It's an amazing organ function. It functions amazingly. It raises these amazing babies through these 9 months. It supports them and feeds them and all the things. But we need to get it out because retained placenta can make you very sick. And so they start fearing that. And sometimes when they're tugging, it can make it so the blood vessels, kind of get ripped off or they weren't ready. And then we can have bleeding and retained placenta and all these things. So they start fearing it in things like breastfeeding, Pitocin, Cytotec, all these things that they're trying to get to help you contract more is effort to help get that out. But yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. You had this beautiful birth and then, whoa, quite a lot right there.
Yeah, a bit of a turn. And in addition to that, I had a second degree tear that they also had to stitch up. So I don't remember if that was before or after the whole extraction,
Well, and
but
that could have caused her fishing, your provider fishing could have caused more tearing and yeah. There is also a possibility that if for some reason it doesn't go out, it will need to be like you'll have to be taken to an OR, which is like a more rare circumstance. But I've had one client in all the 10 years of doing this where, and she was a VBAC too, actually, but had a VBAC, a beautiful birth, and then ended up having to go in and kind of have to get it manually removed. So yeah, breastfeeding as soon as you can, changing positions, also emptying your bladder. This is something that you can do because if our bladder's full, it can hold things up. So sometimes it's like detached but not coming out. So there's things we can do. And then of course, taking that medication and going a step further if we really need to.
Overall, though, I don't regret any of that. Like, it was still like such a beautiful birth, and Like, even though the end, kind of the golden hour was kind of, took a turn, it still was like more than I had, imagined.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that. Like, even with that, and which is a lot, would you still, would you still suggest doing it, or would you have done it if you could go back?
Yeah, no regrets. Like the recovery was like a million times easier, even with the tear and all of that.
Yeah.
I was, going to the botanical garden 4 days postpartum
Oh
with my
my
family.
gosh. You were just walking around?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is amazing. That is amazing.
With toddlers, you gotta give back to real life a little
I
sooner.
know it's so hard to like take that break and recover when we have life that's still moving around us,
Yeah,
and
definitely.
you remind me, did you said you took needed collagen, right?
I did, yeah.
So that actually probably helped healing as well.
Yeah, I love that stuff because I wanted to get more, more protein in. I just put it in my shakes along with the all the thing all the other things that I did, like
Right.
chiropractor and the dates. I did all the things.
Yes. And do you, your doulas, do you want to do a shout out? Where can people find your doulas?
Yeah, 312 doulas.
Three,
I
one, two,
worked with
doulas.
Heather.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Awesome.
they
And
have awesome classes too.
oh, good.
If you're a doula customer, they're free. If you're not, you can still sign up for them and they're super great.
That is so awesome. We love our doulas. And to all those listeners out there, just a reminder, we have a major doula directory from literally all over the US to outside of the US. If you're looking for doulas too, you can go to the vbacklink.com/find a doula. We love our doulas so dang much. Obviously, I loved doulas so much I became one. But yeah, doulas are so amazing. And I love that you said you did chiropractic care and dates and all the things. Are there any other suggestions or tips that you would give to our listeners, as they're going through their VBAC journey?
Yeah, just listen to these podcasts a lot and you'll
Listen to
learn
the
so
story.
much. And join the VBAC Link group on Facebook.
Oh, I love that community. Isn't it just amazing?
Yeah, it's great. And then there's also another VBAC group on Facebook that I really loved as well.
Do you remember the name?
I don't remember.
There's a few on there. Because we
VBAC
love
support group.
VBAC support group.
Yeah,
Awesome.
that one's great. And yeah, just believe in yourself. Like you can do it. You're a badass.
You are a badass and you can do it. I agree. We'll end on that note because that is such a true statement. And girl, you are amazing. And I'm so grateful for you sharing these beautiful stories today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.